This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Tuesday, the winter of discontent. Prime Minister Boris Johnson plunges the UK into its third lockdown as the pandemic worsens. And President Trump holds a rally in Georgia ahead of a runoff for control of the Senate. But will his presence help or hinder the campaign?
Well, it will do both. Certainly, if he generates additional Republican turnout tomorrow, it will help the Republican candidates. But persuading people that their state's elections are rigged and fraudulent has not traditionally been a great get-out-the-vote message.
We'll go to the US shortly, but first up today to the COVID tally on home soil. New South Wales has recorded 4 new locally acquired cases and Victoria has 3. People living in regional New South Wales are being urged to come forward for testing amid concerns that an 18-year-old Sydney man infected with COVID went on a camping trip to several regional centres across the state. And today, the New South Wales government is calling on residents from several suburbs in Western Sydney not to attend the upcoming cricket test, warning that it will impose $1,000 fines on those who dare to step inside the SCG. Our reporter Nick Grimm joins me with more. Nick, g'day. Can we start with the case in regional New South Wales? What do we know?
Yes, Sally, this is a new case that's emerged overnight. It's involving an 18-year-old man, as you said. He visited the Baralla BWS in Sydney's west, the venue that's right at the centre of this particular cluster. Now, the 18-year-old had already departed on a camping trip through regional New South Wales when he received an alert that he should get tested, which he did immediately. It came back positive, so health authorities are now urging anyone in Orange, Ningen and Broken Hill, where he visited, who might be suffering symptoms, to also come forward for testing. There's an alert too for the Ningen Riverside Tourist Park and a business called the Birdie Noshery and Drinking Establishment, which is in Orange. People who were there at the same time as the 18-year-old are also being urged to get tested without delay. Now, I might add that in addition to that new case, there have been 4 other cases identified in New South Wales, 3 of them connected to that Baralla cluster.
And the focus very much remains on the risk of community transmission from the Baralla cluster, is that right?
Yeah, that's a real worry because there's an 11-day period of concern and the call to come forward for testing is also being repeated today for residents in that area, especially anyone who visited the Baralla BWS and Woolworths Baralla at various times over those days. Multicultural community leaders are also being urged to spread that message as well, and residents are being reassured that testing is free. There does appear to have been a problem with some thinking they'll receive a medical bill if they visit any of the 27 testing clinics that are now operating in that area. Today, the state government has also foreshadowed that it will take steps to impose a $1,000 fine on anyone attending the international cricket test in Sydney, in particular, those residing in the following suburbs: Auburn, Baralla, Lidcombe North, Potts Hill, Regent's Park and Rookwood. Here's more from the State Health Minister, Brad Hazzard.
If any of you think that it's still okay to come in with somebody else who's got a ticket or tickets, it won't be okay, because there will be orders, health orders made in the next 24 hours that will enable New South Wales Police to fine you $1,000 if you put foot inside the SCG. You must not come to the SCG. So please be aware, the SCG have asked you not to come, but it will be backed in, because if a police officer stops you and you happen to be at the SCG Trust, if you happen to be the SCG, then you will find yourself receiving a $1,000 fine.
That's the New South Wales Health Minister, Brad Hazzard. And finally, Nick, what about cases in Victoria today?
Just 3 cases of community transmission there today. We're yet to hear if they're linked to Melbourne's Black Rock cluster, but the numbers are giving health experts some confidence that the city's outbreak could be quickly coming under control. Testing numbers have been quite strong there, with around 32,000 swabs conducted in the past 24 hours. Now, Dr. Sanjaya Senayaka is a infectious diseases specialist at the Australian University, and he's told the ABC that while Victoria's numbers are tracking in a very positive direction, New South Wales won't be out of the woods for a while yet.
generally we like to see less than 100 cases in a 14-day period. Now, that's only 7 cases a day, and you think, well, that's not many. But if you think about it, that can generate about 1,000 contacts to be traced. And certainly in the Melbourne outbreak, when you were getting more than those numbers a few months ago, you were seeing exponential growth and difficulty in getting to zero cases on consecutive days. Victoria and Melbourne at the moment, we've only seen about 40 cases in the last 2 weeks, and that includes people in hotel quarantine. So that is very promising. Now, in Sydney itself, however, early on in the outbreak, from about the 7th to the 18th, so about 12 days, we saw well under 100 cases in that two-week period. But that's now gone to over 200 cases in the last two-week period. So that's a bit more dicey. So I'd certainly be very cautious, and I'd be reassessing what happens in the next few days.
That's Dr. Sanjaya Sananayake, infectious diseases specialist at the Australian National University. And before that, our reporter Nick Grimm bringing us up to date. Well, the UK is going into its third lockdown, which is expected to remain in place until at least mid-February, as concerns grow about a fast-spreading new strain of coronavirus. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says the lockdown is unavoidable, with fears the country's health system will be unable to cope with the rise in cases. More than 75,000 people have now died of COVID-19 in the United Kingdom. For more, our Europe correspondent Nick Dole joined me earlier.
Well, Sally, just in the hours before the Prime Minister announced this third lockdown came a really stark warning from health authorities here. All of the chief medical officers here in the UK issued a joint statement saying that unless new restrictions were put in place, then basically the hospitals here were at very real risk of being overwhelmed within 21 days. And there's already real pressure on hospitals. We're seeing big lines of ambulances outside some hospitals. Other hospitals are moving patients to other parts of the country. So there's real pressure there already. Just overnight, we had another record, nearly 59,000 new cases recorded and more than 400 deaths as well. So really serious situation.
So tell us about what these restrictions will actually mean. What will this lockdown entail?
So about 80% of England is actually already under a lockdown, including where I am in London. So at the moment, we're already being told to stay at home unless you have a good reason. This lockdown announced by the Prime Minister really just extended it across England, and Scotland also announced its own lockdown. But I think there was sort of a symbolism that I think a lot of people watching the TV in this national address would have seen. It felt very much like we were going back to square one. It felt very much like the first wave, with the Prime Minister saying that this wasn't just a matter of trying to slow the spread of the virus or to get life back to normal. This was about trying to save the NHS from being overwhelmed. So, you know, people directly being told they must stay at home. It basically ends all, you know, socialising with people. You can meet just one other person in a park. All non-essential shops will be closed. Schools, crucially, won't return, even though just yesterday the Prime Minister was saying that parents should send their kids back to class. Universities won't return either. And clinically vulnerable people will also be told to shield, so essentially just to go inside for potentially months. So even though much of the country, much of England has been under a lockdown of sorts for several weeks, this is much more severe and much more across the board.
And Nick, what's been the public and political reaction to this lockdown announcement and Prime Minister Boris Johnson's handling of this pandemic?
Just in the last few days, in fact today, another poll came out saying that there was broad support for this lockdown. This is something that Boris Johnson had been trying to avoid, but throughout the pandemic, all of last year really, and in the last few days, he has been facing criticism that the decisions that he's taking are the right ones, but that they're coming too slow. So, for example, late last year, there were many, many doctors telling him that he shouldn't let people go and socialise during Christmas, but the Prime Minister said no, it would be completely inappropriate for the government to tell people not to socialise during Christmas. People will have their Christmas. And then at the last minute, he changed his mind and then basically called Christmas off. When you look at the way that the cases are rising, and some of the graphs are almost vertical when you look at the way that people are testing positive now, particularly in London. So there is a real fear that the health system in the next few weeks won't cope. And I think the Prime Minister, even though he wanted to avoid another full national lockdown, has decided that it's simply unavoidable.
That's our Europe correspondent Nick Doll in London. Well, now to the United States, where millions of voters in the state of Georgia are set to decide which party controls the Senate. A day out from the runoff, US President Donald Trump is holding a so-called victory rally in the state in an effort to keep the upper house in Republican hands. But he's still dealing with the fallout from a leaked phone call, urging Georgia's top election official to find enough votes to overturn his defeat in the state in the presidential poll. I spoke with veteran Republican pollster Whit Ayers and asked him whether President Trump's presence will help or hinder the Republican campaign.
Well, it will do both. Certainly, if he generates additional Republican turnout tomorrow, it will help the Republican candidates. But he is also very likely to spend most of his time complaining about losing Georgia and how it was a fraudulent election that cost him the state, which is not going to do a lot for Republican turnout. Persuading people that their state's elections are rigged and fraudulent has not traditionally been a great get-out-the-vote message.
Are you concerned that he is going to spend his time talking about himself?
Yeah, he always does. So you can't be concerned or unconcerned. It's just who he is.
The fact that he's going into Georgia just a day after the release of this audio recording that was picked up by the Washington Post, what's the mood like in the state given the unveiling of this audio and what the president had to say, trying to get officials in Georgia to find extra votes?
People are so locked in to their own corners that they simply filter the latest Trump news through pre-existing ideas about whether they like him or don't like him. The people who don't like him are utterly appalled and feel like he's trying to undermine our democracy. The people who like him will make excuses and say it's, of course, just reasonable for a guy who feels he was cheated to try to avoid a loss in Georgia. So people no longer make independent judgments about President Trump. They simply reinforce their pre-existing views.
Who do you think is going to win this runoff? Do you think the Republicans will be able to get across the line?
Historically, Republicans have been somewhat better than Democrats at getting their voters back for a runoff when there's not a presidential race at the top of the ticket. That's especially true with Democratic struggles getting African-American voters to turn out. But they've never had an African-American candidate to vote for in a major runoff before. So it's very difficult to figure out how those countervailing forces work. Everybody seems to think right now that both races are very, very close.
Do you have a sense that voters are energized or fatigued?
They are energized. They know that control of the U.S. Senate hangs in the balance. And there has been, at least so far, a very, very large turnout, the largest turnout Georgia's ever had for a runoff election.
And how important is this runoff in the bigger picture, the control of the Senate when we're going to have Joe Biden in the White House? Do people in Georgia have a full sense of what that will mean for them?
They do. It's a critical decision, and it will have a substantial effect on what Joe Biden is able to accomplish. It will also have a substantial effect on the real liberals, the left wing of the Democratic Party, that will feel far more emboldened if the Democrats control the Senate than if the Republicans do.
And how much of a sense is there amongst any of the voters about having a backup, having a system of checks? So they might want to have Joe Biden in the White House, but they might want to swing the Senate the other way as a counterbalance.
A lot of Americans have preferred the idea of a check and balance where you don't give one party total control of the government. That has been a problem for the Republican Senate candidates, because to make that argument in their campaigns in the runoff requires assuming that Joe Biden is going to be president, and Donald Trump gets upset whenever they make that argument. So Trump has prevented the two Republican candidates from making their strongest argument, which is that they are a check and balance against the Biden administration.
What do you think is going to happen when everyone comes together for Congress on the 6th to certify the outcome of the election? We've seen a small group of Republicans who are saying they're not going to go ahead with that. Do you think it will still proceed as it should?
There will be some Republicans who will force a debate on whether or not certain electoral votes need to be accepted. Those efforts will fail, and Joe Biden will be declared the winner of the Electoral College at the end of the day. But those Republicans will force a vote on certain electoral votes that will put a lot of Republican senators in particular in a position of saying, I'm for or against Donald Trump, and that will be a very difficult vote for them politically. But clearly, the votes are not there to overturn Joe Biden's election.
That's Republican pollster Whit Ayres, president of North Star Opinion Research. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks for your company. You can find all of our stories on the show's website. Just search for The World Today, and you can also subscribe to our podcast. And staying in the US, where the vaccine rollout is progressing far more slowly than the Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed was aiming for, the delay on getting shots into arms is prompting the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, to threaten hospitals with hefty fines. Our reporter Samantha Donovan has more.
If you're wearing a mask, they'll have you remove it and put one of ours on.
In California, the National Guard is being brought in to help in overwhelmed hospitals, and the young guardsmen and women are having their new surroundings explained to them.
This is outpatient, like lab draws, echoes.
The governor, Gavin Newsom, says nearly 14,000 Californians have died of COVID in just the last fortnight.
Light is at the end of the tunnel. There's real hope and promise with these vaccines. As stubborn as the initial application has been, continue to see more and more progress, more and more rapid distribution, broader community distribution. But in the interim, we are entering in to now this, what we anticipate, the surge on top of a surge.
Across the country in New York, the state's governor, Andrew Cuomo, has confirmed a person has tested positive to the more contagious virus variant first identified in Britain, and he's concerned hospitals aren't using their vaccine allocations quickly enough. At one of his regular media briefings, he used slides to name and shame the offending facilities.
These are the hospitals that have used the existing allocation the fastest and those who have used the existing allocation slowest.
And he says it's the public health providers that are lagging behind.
We need the public officials to manage those public hospitals. I need them to take personal responsibility for their hospitals. You have the allocation. We want it in people's arms as soon as possible.
Mr. Cuomo is threatening hospitals with hefty fines.
Any provider who does not use the vaccine could be fined up to $100,000. Going forward, they have to use the allocation within 7 days. Otherwise, they can be removed from future distribution.
In the U.S. Midwestern state of Wisconsin, a different problem with the vaccine program is being handled by the police. Stephen Brandenburg, the pharmacist arrested last week for ruining 57 vials and therefore hundreds of doses of the vaccine, has told police he didn't think the shots were safe. Adam Garol is the Ozaukee County District Attorney.
Law enforcement was alerted to this on December 30th by Aurora Hospital, an email from the defendant where he gave a statement that he'd removed these vials from refrigeration. He'd done so on two occasions. His intent in doing so was to render them inert because he'd formed this belief that they were unsafe, that the RNA method of creating these medications rendered them unsafe.
The Moderna vaccine is viable for only 12 hours when not refrigerated. The district attorney told a virtual court hearing that Brandenburg had told police he believed the vaccine would mutate people's DNA. The court also heard the pharmacist was getting divorced and had taken a gun to work twice. He's been sacked by his employer, Aurora Health, in Grafton, north of Milwaukee. The judge in the case is Paul Molloy.
Mr. Brandenburg, I'm going to order you released on a $10,000 signature bond. You are not to work or be employed in any healthcare-related function, including serving as a pharmacist. Do you have any questions on them?
No, sir.
You're also not to have any contact with Aurora or any of your Aurora co-workers.
That's Wisconsin Judge Paul Molloy, Samantha Donovan reporting there. And finally today, Australia's Energy Security Board has warned the nation needs to do more to make sure its network adapts to the rapid rise of renewables. In a new report, the board says renewable energy has expanded in Australia faster than expected, but it's identified areas of reform that must be addressed to ensure that physical infrastructure and the marketplace are ready for the massive transition from coal-fired power stations. David Sparks has more.
The Energy Security Board says renewable energy is growing fast in Australia. But speaking with RN Breakfast this morning, its chair, Kerry Schott, didn't shy away from some major challenges.
Well, the main thing that it means is that we have to get the changes required to keep reliability and security in place, and we have to get them in place faster because the pace of change is fast, and it's large-scale renewables like solar and wind farms, but it's also small-scale renewables with rooftop solar on homes and businesses.
The board has released a directions paper identifying the issues facing the electricity network. Among them, with renewables coming online fast and given their intermittent nature, the network needs changes, both physical and in terms of marketplace settings, to guarantee security and reliability. But Kerry Schott says that does not mean renewables are coming online too fast.
We're moving faster than we thought we would be, but it's a manageable issue, and I think there are two basic issues that we need to address. One is to make sure that we have energy when there's no wind or sun, of course. And the market, we think, can be redesigned to strengthen signals to get new investment in to ensure that that's met.
The report says over the next two decades, 26 to 50 gigawatts of new large-scale renewable energy is forecast to come online. In the same period, approximately 16 gigawatts of fossil fuel generation, mainly coal, will shut down. That's around 61% of coal-fired power in the current network. It means more needs to be done to shore up reliable, dispatchable power, such as battery storage, pumped hydro, and to some extent, gas. The Energy Minister, Angus Taylor, says the priorities outlined by the board show more reform is needed.
The more difficult challenge here is to ensure that alongside the record levels of investment we're seeing in renewables, which is great news for bringing down emissions, we have to have balancing generation and changes to the system that ensures that we keep the lights on and we keep prices down. We can't see unplanned losses of big generators. We can't afford to see big generators leaving the market without replacement. And that's why the government has been pursuing a range of different initiatives, and more will need to be done.
Analysts say the energy generators and retailers are ready to address these challenges if the right settings are in place. Maria Petkovic is Managing Director of Energy Synapse, which advises regulators and businesses in the sector.
It's important to realise that we're going through right now the biggest transformation in the history of our energy system. And it's not so much the speed of this transition, but the fact that we're totally changing how we generate electricity and how the energy market works. It's always important to keep in mind that in a global context, Australia and the international electricity market in particular, has some of the highest reliability standards in the world. So it is actually a very reliable market to begin with. Now, one of the issues going forward is the policy uncertainty from a federal level. There is no real energy policy at the federal level, and we've had a lot of snap interventionist decisions or potentials for decisions around, perhaps building new coal or new gas and pumped hydro even. And this uncertainty in policy, it makes it really challenging for private investors to actually make the appropriate decisions in the market. And that stalling of investment that's what actually could drive the threat to reliability rather than just the concept of renewables themselves.
That's Maria Petkovic from Energy Synapse, ending David Spark's report. That's all from the World Today team for today. Emily Burke and the PM team will be along this evening. Thanks for your company. I hope you can join us again at the same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sara. Stay safe and have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.